Have you ever wondered what it would be like to be somebody else for a while? Have you seen someone in the street, visited someone's house, talked to someone on the phone maybe, and even just briefly suspected your life would be better if you were them? Sometimes you'll see them on the telly, those happy, smiling faces, and the thought crosses your mind. Are those people really happier than me? That's quite normal, isn't it? Life's all about comparisons. For some reason with me, I always start with the kitchen, because in my experience, there's no better way of evaluating a lifestyle than opening a kitchen cupboard or having a quick glance over the contents of the fridge. When I was young, I'd look with wonder at jars of peppers, sun-dried tomatoes, pesto, unusual exotic things. Now, of course, they're everywhere. The armour of the temporary cook, a bundle of fresh herbs, and everyone's Jamie Oliver. Nowadays, my more experienced eye scanning the contents of a cupboard immediately spots the little unmarked box at the back, or the incongruous tin of prunes. Twist the lid and, yep, there we are. Why anyone thinks buying a fake can of prunes from a catalogue would ensure the safekeeping of their valuables? Fact, burglars are allowed catalogues too. After a look around the kitchen, if the house looks promising, I put the kettle on. Then obviously it's off to the lounge. Sometimes I head straight for a sideboard drawer. Sometimes, if the layout is particularly appealing, I sit myself down, put my feet up, and contemplate. If I had something to hide in this room, where would I hide it? 9 out of 10 times I'm right. Sometimes I scan the CDs, see if there's something I'm missing in my collection. Then I shove it on the player. Then I go back to the kitchen, drop a tea bag in a mug, pour the hot water from the kettle, and then it's time to head upstairs. I despair for women who keep valuables in their knicker drawer. Put this sentence together in the right order. People, some, never learn. And the underclothes some people wear, have they no shame? Didn't their mother say anything about the dangers of being run over? Anyway, after the knicker drawer, and depending on the state of the master bedroom, I may venture a look under the bed. I may not. Very, very occasionally, I'll lie on top of the bed and stare up at the ceiling. There is absolutely no financial gain in this. But for me, it's the reason I'm there. Because then, you see, you can really see what someone else can see. You can step into someone else's shoes, as it were, without the danger of a verruca. And some of these times, oh, a terrible disappointment. No matter how well you try to cover up, you can tell with a bed. Beds are like people. You can feel when the stuffing's been knocked out of them, and you can tell when they're stone hard with principle and order. Very, very occasionally, I'll come across a bed and lie on it and I'll feel a pang of envy. The bed is just right. Only very occasionally, though. Maybe only once or twice in all the years I've been doing it. And when it does happen, generally, I'll be so enthused I'll get up and rummage through the other rooms in the house in quite a frenzy. I love it when I stumble upon a child's bedroom. Then, as my own personal joke to myself, I'll have a quick shifty over their book collection. I'll always find a copy of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. And I'll autograph just inside the front cover. Then, smiling, I head back downstairs, straight into the kitchen, tea bag out of the cup, a drop of milk and a perfect cup of char. Not too weak, not too strong, not too hot, not too cold. I'm pedantic, I'm afraid. I've always liked things just so. and I don't see it's anything I should be locked up for. I mean, it's not as if I actually take anything, apart from a cup of tea and an odd sandwich, and very occasionally, the odd CD. I don't see why I should be punished. They've sent me to all sorts of psychologists in here, and they all agree. When it comes down to it, I am basically quite a sane person. And at the end of every interview, they always ask me the same question. Can you assure us you'll never do it again? And I just smile. I suppose it's the last time that worries them. It was a Thursday. I was out of sorts. Oh, the sky had been overcast for what seemed like years. There'd been nothing good on the telly for eons. Nobody bothered to phone me, and the only piece of correspondence I'd received was a letter from a catalogue asking me to pay up or send the goods back. So there I was, just on my way to the post office to send off the stuff to the catalogue. Too long, too short, too scratchy, etc. And by sheer chance, just as I was passing the new private estate, I happened to glance across the ring road and caught sight of a house I'd never noticed before. Two stories, mock Tudor, a style I'm generally not a fan of in a new build. It was an extraordinary house in that it was really quite ordinary, but something about it was just right. It was perfect in its proportions, small yet large, new yet old. I felt obliged to cross the road and take a closer look. It was in a cul-de-sac, sitting just a little back from the road. Good location, quiet, but near enough to public amenities. Front garden, gravel, little path, little patch of lawn, couple of potted conifers. Nice. There was no one around as I walked up to the door. I rang the doorbell. Nothing. I waited, then I rang the doorbell once more. Still nothing. I gave the door a little tap, noticing in doing so that the lock was merely one single lock. Need to change that. Within a couple of moments, I was in. The hallway was larger than I expected, spotlessly clean and in shades of caramel and cream. The floor, a warm cherry wood. I approved. Whoever lived here had very good taste. I headed towards where I thought the kitchen should be. I opened a white-painted Victorian door to the most attractive kitchen. Modern, light, pretty yet functional. Absolutely perfect. I opened the fridge. Mineral water, good. Bottle of rosé, very good. Salad, vegetables, fruit, fresh pasta, smoked cheese. Very good indeed. I put the kettle on, filter classy, picked up a rather attractive white porcelain mug and dropped in a circular tea bag I'd retrieved from a stainless steel tea caddy. Then I opened the door to the lounge. Oh, it was even better than I expected. Again, muted colours and the most comfortable-looking leather suite I'd ever seen. I sat down on the sofa, just right. In front of me, by the fireplace, the CD rack. My eyes immediately caught sight of an Ella Fitzgerald CD I'd been meaning to buy for ages. I put it on. "This will be my shining hour," she sang, calm and happy, and I sang along. The kettle had boiled, so I went back into the kitchen and poured hot water into my cup. Then I headed upstairs. The master bedroom, though not palatial, had a sumptuous grace coming from being furnished with excessively good taste. I opened the drawer of the dressing table, as I expected. It contained undergarments. I won't discuss them individually, but safe to say, I approved. I closed the drawer. Then I went over and lay on top of the bed. It was so comfortable. Firm, yet soft, clean, fresh, and comfortable. This was the perfect bed in the perfect house. This is where I should live. I lay looking at the ceiling. If I lived here, I would be truly happy. This is what I've been looking for. I can only assume I fell asleep. I awoke to a scream from the cleaning woman, somewhat disturbed to see a fully clothed middle-aged woman still holding a parcel of goods to be returned to the catalogue, asleep on top of the bed of the master bedroom. She ran downstairs, calling for help. But no one was harmed, and had made my escape by the time the police arrived. Some would say going back a second time was foolish. But this was my house. Everything about this house was just right. And besides, it meant that the time after that I was able to stay overnight. I'd seen on the kitchen calendar the occupants were both going to Bristol that weekend. The fourth time was really just a couple of hours in the morning. I had a coffee and a little spot of lunch, but never relaxed as it was Thursday. Day for the cleaning lady. Well, I didn't want to be there while she was working. After that, every time I visited, I found something more me. Something making the house even more perfect than before. From the crossword puzzle left open and inviting in the conservatory one time, to the discovery of the lavender aromatic bath salts in the ensuite another. Everything was always just right. Gaining access became a little more tricky each time, it's true. The lock on the front door was changed. The windows were often fastidiously closed. One time a new electronic alarm was even installed. Slightly irritating, but not beyond my skills. It was around my 27th visit I was caught. Of course, I should have suspected something when I found the door was only on the single lock. But there was a Robert Wagner movie on that afternoon that I did fancy seeing in surround sound. And anyway, a police constable was posted at a neighbour's across the road, and shortly after I entered the house, so did she. They knew me at the station, obviously. The desk sergeant shook his head when he saw me. "You again," he said. "When will you ever learn? Can't you just stay in your own house?" Of course, the man's a fool. He doesn't understand. That is my house. After all these years of looking, that's the one that's meant for me. I should have lived there. I should be living there. And whoever did, didn't appreciate it, or they wouldn't have gone out so much. Well, if I lived in that house, I'd never go out. And they wouldn't have sold it as soon as I got put in here. Unless she had a breakdown or something. Pathetic. What is there to have a breakdown about if you live in a house like that? Why should I be punished? Because I'm a perfectionist? So what? Why settle for second best? You know, people sneer at the grass being greener. But the truth of it is, sometimes it is.
In After Happy Ever by Lynn Ferguson, you heard Leslie Ash as Goldilocks, and the director was Jessica Dromgoole. And tomorrow it's fairy tale number 3, and this time it's no happy ever after for Snow White either. Despite the handsome prince on a white charger, she's not exactly been blessed with happiness, and her father is still without ever